This is April the 25th, 2000. Howard Braun and Mina Nielsen interviewing Judy Palkovich in the very nice dining room, living room area of her
Village of Shadyside.
Village of Shadyside. Would you give your name? And
my name is Judy Palkovich. And that's where it ends. Okay. When we came back to Pittsburgh, our son David was born a month later, and a month later my friend Reva Nyman invited me to a Hadassah meeting in her home. And the group was called Alana. It was one of the groups in the Pittsburgh chapter. And I became a member. And like most people who join Hadassah, for that matter, who join most organizations, general purpose organizations, it's because a friend asks them and they show up and they join. I didn't join because I was an ardent Zionist. I didn't join because I had any dreams of a career that had to do with Israel or anything. I joined because I liked the women in the group that I joined. The women were very special. Bernice Myers and Marlene Silverman were the kinds of women who were in the group. We were all young mothers, or at least mothers of young children, and it was a very, very congenial group. It met during the daytime, during the evening, and which worked into our schedules, etc. A couple of years later, a group of the people in Alana chose to form a daytime group. They formed a group called Shoshana, and Shoshana was a group that met in the daytime. And I, a couple of years later, joined Shoshana because it became obvious that it was easier for me to go to a daytime meeting than it was to go to a nighttime meeting. And so I chose to do that. I got involved with my group, and then I got involved in a project called the Blintz Project. It was a project of the Pittsburgh chapter. It was created by Charlotte Sadovsky and Marcia Shamovitz, both of whom were ardent Zionists, active Hadassah members of the Jewish community. And they approached the Three Rivers Arts Festival with the idea that food could be an art form. And they got permission to do a fundraiser, making crepes and blintzes and selling them at the Three Rivers Arts Festival. And at the time, there was really no food sold at the festival. The festival was quite new. In fact, I think the festival started in 1965, 66, because I think the first year we were married was one of the very first times it existed. In any case, this was in the toward the middle 70s, and they created this project, and I became a volunteer for it, and the following year I became the chairman of it, and I was the chairman on and off a couple of times. The joy of the Blintz Project was that it created, it had success on various levels. It was a PR success par excellence. It was a wonderful showcase for Hadassah. We got interviewed by KDKA-TV every year, and we got into the newspaper. We always had good photos taken of us. One of the reasons why is because the booth was wonderful, the food was delicious. We had tables and umbrellas, and it was all set up in a very lovely style near the Pittsburgh Hilton. And it involved people of all ages. The joy of the project from a group standpoint, from the Hadassah standpoint, was that although there weren't too many women in their 20s, the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s were very well represented. We originally cooked our product in two kitchens, the Road of Sholem and the Tree of Life. And then we switched totally to the Tree of Life, keeping it in one place. It took us about 6 weeks to produce the product. We had women of all ages working on it. The older, when I say older, I'm talking about women in their 70s and their 80s, were very often the ones seated at long tables who were filling the blatlachs that were made by much younger ones, like me and Bernice and Marlene, who were flipping frying pans and then crepe makers to make the blatlach. And we met for 6 weeks, Monday through Thursday, at the Tree of Life. for several years making the product, and we originally stored it in people's home freezers, and then we eventually developed, we got food lockers to put the stuff in. We had what we called the Hadassah Hilton, which was the booth that held all of our supplies and things down at the Three Rivers Festival. And people volunteered to cook and people volunteered to work. Because Hadassah is a Jewish organization, we never have anything on Shabbos. So we could not work on either Friday night or all day Saturday or Saturday evening. And we contracted with the Women's Auxiliary of St. Stephen's Church, which is a church in Hazelwood, near where my father-in-law had his medical practice. And the women of St. Stephen's came on Friday afternoon and took over and cooked and sold our product on Friday night and all day Saturday and Saturday evening. We paid them. They loved the arrangement because these women cook all the time for their own church. They're always making pierogies and all kinds of things. And they do the work of the preparation, and then they do the work of the selling, and they use it to support St. Stephen's. They were very glad to come to us and just have to show up and cook. They didn't have to do the preparation. We had big signs saying that Hadassah, the St. Stephen's Church, was working for Hadassah so that we could observe our Sabbath. It was great PR. We had nuns in aprons. We had everything. And it was just a wonderful shidduch for years. And all the years that we were down there until we ended, the women of St. Stephen's, in fact, worked for us. We paid them. They enjoyed that. And we were able to keep within the parameters of the way Hadassah operates. We had great PR, not only because we had nuns behind the counter and the women of St. Stephen's, but when anybody would show up with a camera, there were always little kids doing things, and there were men and there were women. It was just a wonderful project. It was a project where women of all ages could get together. Everybody contributed. Everybody learned from each other. Those of us who were younger admired the stories and the stamina of the women who'd been around for decades and what they had done. We got great publicity, and we made a lot of money. Unfortunately, the festival got overtaken by entrepreneurs who wanted to bring in lots of different kinds of foods, became more of a kielbasa festival than anything else. The smells of a lot of the stuff cooking drove people away, and it went from 10% of our net, which was what we paid at the beginning, to 25% of our gross to a flat payment of $10,000 to even enter the festival. We did it 1 year, and then we had to stop because it was no longer enough of a moneymaker to make it worth our while. At our best, we made about $45,000, and we used the money for the projects that Hadassah sponsors, and we gave a very large donation to the Young Judea Scholarship Fund. We sent many kids to Young Judea Camp with the money that we made from the Blintz booth, which was, in fact, the original reason why Charlotte and had put the thing together, because, in fact, they were trying to figure out a way to raise scholarship money for the Young Judea Camp.
Yeah.
It was a glorious chapter in the history of the Pittsburgh chapter of Hadassah. I think the festival has lost a great deal by not having groups like Hadassah there anymore, but they don't.
Yep, it's one of those things that are long gone.
Yep.
And so changed that it's not recoverable. Lots of things in this world are really mm-hmm. not recoverable. Yep. What about the next item, Gert Hoffman?
Oh.
And the Guardian.
The Guardian dinner. Okay. Gert Hoffman was a woman who was never the president of the Pittsburgh chapter of Hadassah, but she was one of the backbones of it. She was an ardent Zionist and an ardent member of Hadassah. In fact, at one point, when the Hadassah office burned down, I don't even know where it was located, there was a fire in the Hadassah office. For the better part of a year, the Hadassah office operated out of Gert Hoffman's basement. Then they moved into the Maxon Towers. Gert Hoffman wanted to figure out a way to raise the level of giving for the Pittsburgh chapter. And I was the donor chairman, and Marlene Silverman was the president. When we met with Gert and we created what was then called and is still called the Guardian Dinner, which was the category we created. To be a guardian meant a $500 contribution to Hadassah. And Gert believed that this should be a dinner. It should be held in the evening. Husbands should be invited so they could learn more about Hadassah. And we created an interesting, which lasts to this day. The invitation goes to Hadassah members, and they are eligible to bring a male escort. Now, for most women, this is their husband. But for women who never married or for women who are widowed, it could be any male. They didn't have to come with a man, but if they wanted to.
They could.
And we created, in fact, we have five different women over the years whose grandsons brought them. Mm-hmm. And it was a wonderful event. Gert lived for 4 years. For 4 years, Gert paid for this dinner. And you made your $500 contribution, and you were eligible to come with a male guest. Male escort is what we called it.
Yes.
And then Gert died.
In 88.
And her grandsons, she had four grandsons here in Pittsburgh and three in Israel. Seven grandsons altogether from her two daughters. And her four Pittsburgh grandsons decided to give the dinner the year after Gert died in memory of their grandmother. And they paid for it. And we were extremely grateful for them doing it. And we were overwhelmed, overjoyed, when they announced at that dinner that they were so pleased that this was being done in memory of their grandmother that they would do it again the next year. And they have done it every year since then. The dinner is paid for by the Ratner family. It is now in an endowment at the Federation that pays for it. They put the money there that pays for the dinner. And it was $500 up until this last year when we moved it to $600. And hopefully it is my hope that it will get closer to $1,000 to go. It has become an annual event. There are a core of us who go, barring family obligations or out-of-town commitments, to it every single year. It is an absolutely lovely event. It has been held at the Concordia Club from the very first, and it continues to be held there. It is a legacy of Gert Hoffman. Her grandsons continue to do it. At this year's dinner, her grandson Richard said that two of his boys, who were 7 and 8 at the time, I think, or 6 and 8, wanted to know why they couldn't come to grandma's dinner, to great-grandma's dinner, because actually, it's great-grandma. And next year, they are coming in their little tuxedos to this dinner. And I think it's absolutely wonderful that the boys have carried on this tradition. Some of them have become donors in their own right to Hadassah, in addition to the dinner. And it's just a marvelous testament to a marvelous woman and to the capacity of a grandmother to influence her grandsons and of a family to keep a tradition going for a very good purpose.
You became president in 86.
Yes.
Following Bernice Myers.
Right.
A major issue at the time had to do with the so-called big chapter status. Would you review that, please?
Yes. In the lexicon of Hadassah, a big chapter had a minimum of 5,000 members. Hadassah in Pittsburgh had actually gotten to 4,800 members in the middle 50s, but had never done anything about becoming a big chapter. They did not have 5,000 members. I was determined, as was Bernice Myers, who had preceded me, that Pittsburgh become a big chapter. And what that meant in the organizational structure of National Hadassah is that the president of the Pittsburgh chapter would then sit on the national board as the president of a big chapter. Through various and sundry ways, we were granted observer status. Pittsburgh and Beverly Hills were granted observer status, which allowed myself and Molly Novak, who was the president of Beverly Hills, to come and sit at the national board as observers who could speak but who did not have a vote. While that was going on, we managed to change the national constitution of Hadassah to lower the number to 4,000. And actually, Beverly Hills attained the 5,000 and became a big chapter in 1968. Once we lowered the number in 1969, I finished my presidency in May, and on July 19th at 11:35 in the morning in Atlanta, Georgia, it passed at our convention, and Pittsburgh became a big chapter and has been a big chapter ever since. Not only does that mean that the Pittsburgh president gets to sit as a sitting president, but it allows presidents of the chapter, when they finish their term, to become members of the national board if they can get elected or selected. We now have quite a few members of the national board who are from the Pittsburgh chapter, and we're a very active chapter, and I'm very pleased that I was able to effect that change. When I finished my presidency, because I had not been a member, had not been a sitting big chapter president while I was, I had no status at the national organization, status being exactly what I mean. If you had been a past president of a sitting chapter, then you had automatic rights to a year on the board, and then you could be elected. I had no rights because I had not been a sitting chapter president, but I was selected by the national president, Carmi Kalmason, to be picked up, to be given a position, and subsequently was elected to the national board and have held a variety of positions in a variety of positions, working with chapters throughout the country. In 1994, I was appointed the chairman of the Beijing Hadassah delegation to the Beijing Conference in 1995. I also became the chairman of the American Affairs Department in 1994. At the time, I also got the Beijing appointment, and subsequently was the chairman of the American Affairs Department for 4 years till 98 and 99. I became the head of government relations for National Hadassah. Government relations, which means I supervise and oversee both the Zionist Affairs Department and the American Affairs Department and their interface with government, with our American national government. The project that has been consuming me for the last 5 years is to get a bill passed to protect people's employability and health insurability, if they choose to access a genetic test to help them make the best possible medical decision for their own lives. And we have been instrumental in spurring that on. We have headed many coalitions. We got the president to include it in his State of the Union address this past February. We 2 weeks later, he granted that right to all federal employees. Neither their health insurance nor their employability can be affected by the access to a genetic test or the results of a genetic test. We are working to make that possible for the entire American public. In that capacity, we convened in the spring of 98 a meeting in Washington, D.C., sponsored by the National Institutes of Health, Hadassah, and the Jewish Council for Public Affairs to discuss the effect, the possible discrimination of the Jewish community based on the headlines that had come out of the genetic testing. The Jewish community had led the way in certain genetic research starting in the 1950s by getting blood tests from many, many people to try to eliminate Tay-Sachs from the Jewish community, which we have virtually done. But in the process, all of the blood samples given have become stored, and a stored blood sample can be used for anything, and it has been the basis for the genetic research in this country. It's not the only basis, but it is the major basis, was the major basis for many years. And consequently, many of the things found ended up being Jewish, directed at Jews. Jews have this, Jews have that, but in fact they were using Jewish blood, which is why they came out with it. And so we convened a conference to discuss the possible discrimination of a group based on genetic testing, etc. It was the first and I believe the only time that official representatives of the Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, and Reconstructionist branches of Judaism were represented at the table in the same place at the same time, along with representatives from many other Jewish organizations and the NIH to discuss the delegitimization of a group based on publicity headlines. The purpose of it was not to stop the research, but to try to stop the kinds of headlines and the kinds of discriminatory articles that were being written. Jewish women, I mean, women of all ages, get breast cancer, and if you live long enough, the chances are 1 in 8 that you will get breast cancer. Being Jewish does not convey, does not make it more possible for you to have breast cancer. And having the genetic BRCA1 or BRCA2 genetic defect, which was discovered at Hadassah Hospital in Israel in connection with the NIH, does not mean you will have breast cancer, and it, in fact, only accounts for about 9% of all breast cancer. But nevertheless, a lot of headlines were screaming, Jewish women this and Jewish women that, and that was the purpose of it. We came very close just a few weeks ago to getting a rider passed on a Health and Human Services authorization bill, but we didn't get it. There was a straight party vote. The Republicans voted no. The Democrats voted yes, and the only person to cross the line was our own inspector.
Why? I don't understand that. Why? On what basis would the... First of all...
The reason to pass federal legislation has nothing to do with discriminatory headlines. The reason to pass federal legislation is to make it illegal to use the results of a genetic test to either deny somebody employment or deny them health insurance. Both are very legitimate problems. People have been fired because their employers did not want them to stay if they had some genetic problem. Most genetic tests are not predictive. They are only possibilities. All human beings have a minimum of about 50 different genetic defects, most of which never make any difference in anybody's life. And we are trying to ensure... to legislate so that nobody's health insurance or employment is at risk by their getting a genetic test to try to access the best medical information possible on which to make a medical decision. The discriminating headlines, et cetera, is another aspect of all of this. But the legislation we're working on is so that you cannot be denied your employment or your health insurance. Now, a lot of people think that the Kennedy-Kassenbaum bill, which was passed several years ago, was landmark legislation, and it meant that you could take your health insurance, you couldn't be denied health insurance when you changed jobs. What Kennedy Kassenbaum did not ever say is how much you could be charged for your health insurance when you changed jobs, and it didn't have anything to do with employability. So it's that's what we've been working on. All federal employees now have this guarantee because the president issued an executive order which gave it to them. But it is a major problem that a lot of people are not aware of. As long as you are working at a company that at which you have health insurance and nothing happens, you're fine. But if you were to change, you could lose the ability to have a job and you can lose your health insurance. It's a major problem. And that's what we've been working on. And so I have testified before a Senate committee. I did it 2 years ago. We've participated in all kinds of press conferences. We've been working on a bill by Louise Slaughter, who is a representative from the Buffalo area in New York. The last press conference we held was just about 3.5 weeks ago. We had the leadership of the Democratic leadership of the Senate and the Democratic leadership of the House. And Louise Slaughter held a very good press conference. It came out the week before the so-called completion of the Human Genome Project, which got such great publicity. And eventually we will get this legislation passed. But it lost on a straight party line vote, and it lost because, first of all, the Republicans don't want the Democratic leadership to get credit for any bill. And this was a Democratic leadership bill. And secondly, because the Republicans are much more beholden to the insurance companies who would prefer that this didn't pass. but it will pass eventually. Well, the reason why Hadassah does what it's doing is Hadassah is dedicated to medical research. This particular, the BRCA1, BRCA2, that's BRCA1 and BRCA2, which are two two markers on a gene that have to do with breast cancer, were originally discovered at Hadassah Hospital on a project funded by the NIH. And Hadassah is dedicated to medical research. And that's how we originally got involved. Health maintenance, the maintenance of everybody's health, is one of our major goals. And we approach this problem as an organization of women who want to make sure that our families and everybody we know and the greater public can access the best medical care based on the best medical advice. And we believe that the history of insurance discrimination and employment discrimination mitigates against that. This becomes a program which is both self-serving and very humanitarian. We all have genes. We all have gene defects. The whole problem of the stigmatization of Jews was a part of it. But it is a definite outreach. It definitely fits in with the mission of Hadassah, which is medical research and medical care. And it definitely has attracted many people to Hadassah who are interested in the fact that we're interested in an issue that cuts so close to home for everybody in the country. Our work with this legislation is hand in glove with the fact that Hadassah has established a major gene therapy unit at Hadassah Hospital at Ein Kerem in Israel. And it is one of the projects for which we get a great deal of publicity, and people are very happy that we're doing it, and we get members because of it. Not everybody is thoroughly attached to Zionism anymore. They are looking for they look to the organization to do things in Israel as well as to do things in this country. And this particular project fits right in with the way Hadassah can carve its own niche. It's something that has to do with Hadassah Hospital. It's something that has to do with Jews. It's something that has to do with everybody. It's legislation we can work on, and we carved out our own niche.